Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Matt Knight.
Hello, Mr. Joe.
Hello, Mr. Matt. Hello, hello indeed. Oh, welcome back. Another twosome episode after last week. We obviously had Dan from Dan Explains It All from Old Blood Noise Endeavors. And I really enjoyed that episode. It was informative and cool. I really like Dan. He is lovely. I want him back.
He's got a nice voice. Very nice voice.
He's good for explaining it all, which is, of course, what he does.
Unbelievably, you know, that's what he's good at. So there we go. But yeah, no, yes. good to have him on there. Good to talk about some of the stuff. Seen lots of people talking about the Float. It's their new pedal.
And actually, I did see Peter post about the Calamity drive as well, yes. which he's picked up on the group, which is great. The, you know, Dan's very own Calamity drive for his band Plainspeak. Which is incredibly topical, the Calamity drive, and the way he set it up, considering I said, I think last week on the Patreon episode, that I wanted to talk about the Origin FX Halcyon Green Overdrive. And just the whole backbone of the Halcyon is very similar to the Calamity.
Absolutely. It's do you know what? It's interesting. So for anyone listening who hasn't seen it, Origin FX have released their very own Tube Screamer. They're not hiding that fact. They're, you know, very much promoting it as their version of a Tube Screamer, which is fine. I think everyone is allowed to do what they want to do. And if they feel that they can improve on a circuit, I mean, Boss does it for their own pedals. You know, we've got Wazza. So, you know, we take our circuits and we go, what can we do? You know, 30 plus years later, so I think that's fine. But yeah,
I think the thing for Origin FX that got that maybe made it a bit of a discussion around it being a Tube Screamer is when, you know, sort of Mountain Fuzz Pantheon pedals, you know, whatever, they all have weird names. When some fella with his own pedal company does his version of a Tube Screamer, everyone goes, oh cool, it's a Tube Screamer alternative, it's 100 quid, it's 200 quid or something like that, that's fine. But when someone like Origin FX does it, Origin FX pedals are expensive and they are very premium. So when Origin FX copy a pedal that is incredibly affordable, there's an awful lot they have to do to warrant the price point almost.
Yeah, I kind of get that. And I guess it's just one of those things, isn't it? I think some people say they've got an overdrive pedal and it's based on a classic circuit and it's kind of obvious what it is. And some aren't as kind of obvious as what this is. This is very much like, it looks like a Tube Screamer. It's the same colour. You know, it's got the term 808 on it, you know, and they're even using the kind of Tube Screamer name and registered trademark in their description. So, you know, I think they're very much, and you know, imitation is the as they say, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. But I think what's nice here, and again, something I've not really heard of before, is this adaptive circuitry, which obviously is proprietary, what they're calling it, to the Halcyon, but also similar in the Calamity Drive, which is effectively...
it's the articulation control, which actually has exactly the same... It's in the same place. It's a switch with three different settings, and it essentially does the a very similar thing to the Halcyon.
Yeah, I mean, they do say, there's a... slightly off topic, but they always say that when you've got someone who invented something, that actually someone else is inventing exactly the same thing. So it's, I think there's a story about like the light bulb or something, and they were like, if Edison hadn't involved the light bulb, we wouldn't have light bulbs now or electricity now. And I was like, no, someone else was literally inventing the same thing at the same time. It's just like that product became the product to use. It's just like, it's just one of those things, but I think it's quite interesting that, because this adaptive control, from what I understand, is basically, I think it's something to do with the dry level. So the Halcyon Green Overdrive has got level, drive, tone, which you'd normally expect, and then you've also got a dry level. So a lot of tube screamers have a level of kind of dry bleed, I guess, in your overdrive, which kind of gives it that kind of tube screamer type vibes.
Gives
very
it
kind
that
of
transparent
mid-focus
thing, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's obviously it's got that kind of mid push, but also gives you a level of dry, which is nice because you can dial all of it out or you can dial a lot of it in, which I think is really nice because it, as they say, kind of adds body and definition when you're just boosting a low gain amp sound, so you can add a lot more dry in as well, which is quite cool. But the adapt control basically it just means that when you're playing with the volume control, it allows the kind of mid push of that pedal to sort of fade away, so you can kind of get the 808 sound like absolutely cranked, but you can roll back on the volume control. And that's something that kind of the classic tube screamers don't do. They're not as dynamic to your volume control, so right. This allows you to kind of dial a little bit more of that adaptive, hence the name, sort of control in when using it with various guitars.
And I think that's very topical of the type of pedal that the Tube Screamer aims at, because it's trying to be, the Tube Screamer is naturally a low gain drive pedal. And the thing about low gain is what it's really trying to emulate is edge of breakup, sort of amp breakup. And the thing about amp breakup is it's very dynamic. The softer you play, the less it's going to break up. So when a Tube Screamer still applies the exact same amount of gain when you're playing very softly, it sounds fake. Whereas the Halcyon's offering an extraordinarily dynamic version of that.
Yeah.
Which makes it a great preamp, more than anything else.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
We'll
iZotope and Native Instruments have teamed up to create the start-to-finish bundle that home recording guitar nerds have been waiting for. Plus, you, dear listener, get an extra 10% off with Guitar Nerds by using discount code NERDS10 at the checkout on iZotope.com. From the creative spark to the final touch, their new bundles include pretty much everything you could possibly need, which is great because it's far too easy to sink hundreds of pounds and a big chunk of your time into just picking up random plugins. The Music Production Suite 4.1 and Complete 13 bundle contains over 30 intelligent mixing, mastering and repair plugins, 65 premium instruments, 20 plus expansions and over 35,000 sounds. And if that's a bit basic for you, they've also bundled Music Production Suite 4.1 with Complete 13 Ultimate, which gives you everything that makes Complete 13 incredible, plus a colossal library of added synths, sampled instruments and effects, 115 plus premium instruments and effects, 39 Native Instruments expansions and over 65,000 sounds. Whew. It sounds like a lot. It is. It's very good, very comprehensive. And as we've come to expect from iZotope, it's very good value. If you're looking to get into home recording, I cannot recommend it more highly. And if you're already into home recording, it really is the one-stop shop for making what you do sound better. This podcast is entirely treated and produced using iZotope plugins, and Native Instruments have been responsible for almost every synth or sample you've heard on our Guitar Nerds jingles. Check out their great new bundles on iZotope.com or follow links in the description of this podcast and use discount code NERDS10 at the checkout for 10% off anything in the iZotope arsenal.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is, I know some people are like, oh, it's another Tube Screamer. And I actually think it's kind of something very different. I think it's homage to what they're like and done it in Origin's way. And I think this is definitely something to try. I mean, Joe, you've obviously had one for a bit now, so you've had a little bit more time playing it, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, to be honest, that's the way I've sat with it as kind of a preamp. I can't imagine putting it on. I mean, everyone plays differently. But I can't imagine ever wanting to turn it off. I'm sure it can be absolutely used in the way that most people use Tube Screamers as a big sort of, that quintessential drive sound. But I found just using sort of the mellower end of it, the most dynamic section setting on the adaptive switch, and letting quite a fair amount of dry through, I was like, well, this is actually just a fantastic preamp, just to give you a little bit of very dynamic grit when you're going into something very clean. So perfect if you're going, to be honest, into a DAW, or if you're going into like a very clean Class D amp, like DV Markov, some great sort of very clean Class D amps, or even something like a Jazz Chorus.
Mm.
This will kind of give you all the headroom that you get from something like a Jazz Chorus, but with an incredibly realistic dynamic edge of breakup.
Yeah.
So, and I thought it sounded as good on bass as it did guitar, by the way, as well.
Interesting.
I used it for both and just basically used it as the main amp. Then just added like a cab sim onto the guitar and the bass, and I'm going to upload some reels onto Instagram later this week of me using it on both guitar and bass. But yeah, exactly that, just a gorgeous amp style edge of breakup pedal. Hard to beat, to be honest. Calling it a Tube Screamer is almost, I know it's based on that, but it makes people not think enough of it. It's so much more.
Yeah, I guess the reason people buy a Tube Screamer is that mid-push sort of, driven circuit. But yeah, you could just go and buy a Tube Screamer. So you've got to do something different and you've got to do something in your own way. And actually, I think one thing I like about this is when I've tried similar pedals, similar things that kind of do that mid-focused drive is that, yeah, again, they don't clean up particularly well in a volume control. And that's why I always like kind of more fuzz pedals, because when I'm just sort of playing at home, I like to play around with the volume control and clean it up and then push it forward for a bit more drive. Something that I only really got used to in the last kind of few years, I always thought, oh, I'll just have a drive pedal for each drive sound. And that's what I have avoided these kind of pedals before, because I'm just or more recently, because I'm like, oh, it just does that sound and I don't feel that I can sort of play around with the volume control a bit more. So I like the idea of this and having a bit more of the adapt control. But also, don't forget they've also put the you've got two switches in terms of the voicing. So you've got the 808 or the mod, and obviously the mod gives you it moves the
mid. It's a bit more full range, isn't it? The mod.
Yeah, they say it moves the mid hump slightly up the frequency range. So it's a little bit more resonant, which can be better for humbuckers. But I think it's just something that you just sort of mess around with and find your own sound. But I think this gives you a little bit more versatility on that classic sort of tube screamer circuit. So keen to try it, Joe. You need to send it my way.
I will send it your way later this week once I've made some videos for it. I really like it. I think it's excellent. Tube screamers have never really been my speed, but this is absolutely banging. It's kind of up there with the best drives that I've checked out this year, I think, as being sort of the most interesting and the most fun.
Yeah.
For me, it is still really difficult to top the Angry Rhubarb, the Redbeard.
Yeah, it's Angry Rhubarb. It's funny you mention that because, again, I've got more. I think I've got more drive pedals followed closely by delay pedals than anything, and I plugged in the Red Mist again, and just sort of like, you know, when you've got so much, you know, God, it sounds awfully privileged. When you've got so many pedals, you know, you just. But I think the great thing about the Angry Rhubarb, and when we were talking about it on the Gear of the Year, is that the fact that it's effectively almost like three stages of gain, because you've got the volume, the post-drive and the pre-drive, and then you've got that sort of frequency control, haven't you? And you can basically turn it into anything.
Yeah, it can be a really thin coctoir. It can turn a big humbucker guitar into the thinnest telly if you're sort of boosting those high-end frequencies. It can be a big, thick, mushy, doom-like fuzz drive. Like, it can do all those things, but it does them all with this incredible depth and articulation that I don't hear on a lot of pedals. It makes your sound very three-dimensional, your drive sound very three-dimensional. And I think if you know a bit about drive and specifically a bit about what sort of drive sounds you like, then you need to, it's almost, that's about understanding what frequencies and where you like that drive to be coming from. And so being able to choose whether you're driving particular frequencies, whether you're slamming the front end or whether you're post-driving that sound, you know, creating, shaping an EQ sound and then driving it afterwards. There's each three of those drive stages will create a completely different thing. And if you know what you're looking for, you can create something incredibly tailored to you. Yeah, just with this incredible depth. Other pedals have gone after this sort of style of drive, and I don't know why it's not universal.
Yeah, I think as they say on the website, you know, there's so much debate over whether an overdrive circuit sounds better before and after EQ, so why not have both? And I think that's the thing, you know, so many people, and I think maybe I should have one on my board, but so many of the top session players, loads of people have said the secret weapon, like a Boss G7, like an EQ, basically, your pedal board, because you can boost certain frequencies. If you've got a switcher, obviously you can move it around. Yeah. It works with everything. You know, an EQ pedal kind of allows you to change pre or post that drive sound. The fact that you can fit it all, it's all in one, you know, as they call it, paradynamic overdrive. Yeah. You know, I've heard this thing go anywhere from sort of Klon to sort of like, you know, much more sort of like filthy full gain overdrive. I actually think as someone probably more like you, Joe, who's in the studio, it's just something you could kind of tweak around and find a lot of different EQ settings for what you need.
Well, that's actually it, to be honest. Like, and we spoke about this on Gear of the Year, but the what really got me excited about the Angry Rhubarb was when I went into the studio with Polymath and Tim, our guitarist, ended up, we had a bucket of pedals to choose from. He had a big pedal. We had a whole load of stuff out, so many drives and fuzzes. And you know, we ended up using the Angry Rhubarb on almost everything just because on its own, slammed into the front of an old 60s Vox AC30, it was capable of doing everything, doing the big, thick like neck humbucker style backup guitar that Tim would do, and then his normal cocktail, very thin, very mid-focused thing. And all we had to do was write down a couple of settings. I think we had three settings written down, and that was the bulk of the record. Rather than switching pedal, it was just this incredibly dynamic drive pedal.
Yeah, I think if you haven't gone and if you're listening to this and you haven't got one yet, definitely one worth trying, because I think it's a little bit different as well. It's not like here's your volume, here's your tone, here's your gain, see you later. And it's based on a Tube Screamer, for example. it's very much like, you know, here's some pre-drive, here's some post-drive. Obviously, you can make it as loud, as quiet as you want, and then here's a great parametric EQ. Like, just mess around, like, have some fun. Like, don't let us tell you how to use it, almost. You know, it's not like, you know, well, coming back to the origin thing, this is very much a Tube Screamer. You're going to have especially if you're into guitar effects, you're into that world, you're kind of going to have an understanding of what that effect is. With something like this, it's almost like paradynamic overdrive. I'm like, where do you, like, the world is your oyster. The gain world is your oyster. You can kind of go out and do whatever you need to do, which I think is great and so rare as well nowadays. That's something that's not, and don't get me wrong, I love these kind of pedals, but, you know, that's not sort of over-the-top crazy fuzz with, as you said, Joe, with a crazy name that does something crazy. This is like, no, this is a solid, like, working distortion overdrive for your pedal board that can be shaped in so many ways.
Exactly that. It's a one-stop workhorse of a drive pedal.
And I think that's the same as very much as the Red Mist. You know, Mikey was very much wanting a pedal that meant that if he was on tour, he didn't know what backline he was going to get. He could basically plug that into a Twin or a Marshall or whatever and get the sound he wants. And I kind of get the feeling, same thing with this, you know, perhaps not on the same gain scale, slightly different perhaps, but very much something that you can kind of go, yeah, like I can basically dial this in to the room or the situation that I'm in, which I think is really, really nice.
Yeah, exactly. The Red Mist was hard for me to get my head around, just because I don't like the sound of Marshall amps, that weird sort of reined in sort of, I don't know, that sort of compressed thing. They sound naturally cheesy, and I think it's just the type of music, like punk rock, classic rock, that Marshalls have been traditionally used on. I'm not saying they're not fantastic, dear listener, and you know, lots of people have used them very effectively. I just can't help but think that I can listen to them objectively and really like them. When I play them and when I hear them myself playing through them, I'm like, I do not like this sound. It sounds tacky.
Yeah.
And so the Red Mist, because it was going after that Marshall sound, it's that same sort of thing. It's just not my vibe. Have you ever been into Marshall amps, Matt?
I have had, what have I had Marshall-wise? So actually, and I wish I'd never sold this, I did at one point have the Marshall AFD 100 / signature Appetite for Destruction head.
Wait, what?
Yep, had one of those.
Wait, what was that? Was that the...
was the Silver Jubilee reissue.
Oh, right. They released like a 5-watt or a 1-watt / thing, didn't they?
Did they? Yeah, I think they might have done a smaller AFD, but I had a Marshall AFD, never used it. Never used it. I think it stayed in its box the entire time I had it, basically. Terrible. Oh, God, that's depressing.
Yeah, Marshall SL5. It was a 112, Celestian Greenback, 1-watt or 5-watt. Valve combo.
No, I just great. Had a look here. Marshall AFD 100 listing on Reverb for about £5,000.
You have made a mistake.
I think I sold it for £800, which is basically, I think, what I paid for it at the time. And it sounded good. I always wanted a Marshall Silver Jubilee because John Frusciante played a Marshall Major, which is the 200-watt one in silver. He always had one of those in his rig. And I think I've told this story before, but there was a little guitar shop in Ipswich, where I'm from, that is now closed, but it was the guitar shop at the time. And they had, I think it was in the 80s, they did like a Marshall 25-watt mini stack, but it was like two 2x12s and a and a head rather than 2 4x12s and a head.
Wow.
And I think this is like 2002 and it was like 750 quid. And I was like, yeah, definitely can't afford that. You know, I was like 14. But I really wanted that. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I've always wanted a Marshall Blues Breaker 18. I think they sound great. Friend of the podcast, Dan Grace, uses one. That's basically the only thing he uses, and they sound amazing. Mm. I prefer like kind of collectability rather than anything. Yeah, they did the 1 watt series, and they did a JTM 1 offset limited edition stack, which was very cool, and they sounded really good. But I mean, yeah, you'd never gig with it. I'll tell you what I did have. Just talking through all the gear, I did have a Marshall Class 5, and that thing was wicked.
Yeah. The Marshall Class 5 was very cool.
In fact, well, I mean, they must be discontinued now, right? They don't make a Class 5 anymore. But I had a red Class 5, and that was really good.
Oh, I remember that when they started doing limited colours, they did a number, didn't they? They did like a British Racing green, red.
They did.
They probably did a blue, like a Pelham blue sort of thing, I think.
They did.
Never see those secondhand.
No, although I am looking at a secondhand Class 5 for a very reasonable price.
They don't go for a lot of money, but they don't be fooled by the reissue ones of the Class 5, which are made to look like the Blues Breaker.
No, you want the first ones, right? So I think really early ones.
Because it's the C5 Class 5 is the 110 5-watt one that they redid as the Bass Breaker style chassis. And they go for about 250 quid, I think.
Yeah. Very cool. So I did have one of those that sounded really good. And for home use and stuff, you know, was great. Wasn't too overpowered. You know, did have a bit of clean headroom in. You could drive it if you wanted to.
Yeah.
But I thought, you know, very, very cool. Very, very cool indeed.
I agree that I did really like those and I like the sound of those. I've just found a yellow, like a graffiti yellow Marshall C5 Class 5. So it is that Blues Breaker styling. A 2010 super limited edition, £1,000 on Reverb.
Oof. I'm looking at the same one. Bernie Marsden, one of a kind.
Oh, is that what it is?
it's being sold by Bernie Marsden. I don't know where they apparently. Oh, it was given to Bernie Marsden by Jim Marshall himself. Looks very cool. Yeah, that's the one that you want. That's the one that I think looks wicked. But yeah, they did a red one, which I thought was really cool. But yeah, I think everyone goes through like a Marshall phase, don't they?
I guess so, yeah.
But yeah, probably I don't even know what they make now that I would buy. I'll be perfectly honest. I've sort of lost touch with what's out there. Obviously, the Studio Series was probably more up my street, which, if I remember rightly, was their kind of 20-watt head. They still make the Blues Breaker, which I probably buy. They still make pedals, which I think is bananas. Looking at it, it would have to be the Handwired Series.
Yeah, they've got some great stuff in the Handwired series.
The 74X, that's the one. That is the one, really. I think that's the one I'd have to have. That is basically the Blues Breaker, the 1974X.
Let's see. They do some good stuff in their vintage reissue series as well. I don't think that should be underestimated.
Yeah, I think probably for people getting into Marshall for the first time who want something more affordable, that's perhaps more of the classic style, I think the Studio is probably the one to go for. Obviously, the classic Marshall MS2 microamp, you know, you can't forget that.
The SV series were the ones that stood out for me recently when I saw them in Birmingham for the first time when they were camped opposite the Ashdown booth. They did the SV20s, which I think we spoke about on a podcast after I'd seen them, because you could buy them in head and cab or combo form, 20-watt valve amps, that classic sort of Art Deco Marshall logo, like a sort of fawn grill, and then it was either like a... almost a Fiesta red, a Pelham blue, or a British Racing green Tolex.
Yeah, that's
very cool.
That is very cool. But yeah, I think it'd have to be a 74X. I think, to be honest, really? I had to go back and buy any amp from my previous collection of amplifiers. I used to have, on a side note, used to have a really good cab by Matamp. And then when I saw a friend that I hadn't seen for a number of years, he went, "Oh, I still got that cab you sold me." And I went, "Which one?" He went, "Yeah, it was like a white Matamp cab." I went, "Oh man, I wish I'd never sold that." And he's like, "Yeah, I haven't used it since the day you sold it to me." And I'm like, do you want to sell it back? I've got a friend, he was really, really into guitar, and he just stopped being really into guitar. So
I hate those people.
Well, the funny thing was that at the time, we've been meaning to meet up, because he was like, "Oh yeah, I've got like..." I think he bought like all the Electro Harmonics, like big box pedals, the original ones, like a Pog and stuff like that. He's like, "Yeah, they're just like in their boxes." And I'm like, "Well, please, can I have them for no money?" So yeah, he's got like a whole bunch of stuff. He's like, "Yeah, I just don't use it. You'll have to come around and see it." I'm like, "Yes, I will. Yes, I will." So he had a really good cab. I've owned a couple of Dr. Z's, and I would be very tempted to buy another Dr. Z. I've seen a couple up for sale secondhand. They did a really good one. They still make it, actually, called the Maz 18. But the Maz 18 Junior with reverb is probably what I would have if I could have one again right now. Either that or a Marshall Lone Star Special, which I had for ages, and I gigged with that, and that thing was wicked. And they don't go for tons of money. They do come up occasionally.
Why didn't you get one, Matt?
Because I've got no money, Joe. I keep spending it. But yeah, 1x12 combo, 25, 15 or 5 watts, if I remember. 35, 15 or 5 watts. Loads of clean headroom. Two basically identical channels. One that had a separate drive control, so you could drive it a bit harder. But a great pedal platform. Yeah, really, really solid amp. So, I'd be tempted one day in the future to come back and get one of those things.
That would be your one, would it? If you could get one amplifier right now that you don't own.
That I don't own. Yeah, probably be that. I mean, I love Boogie amps, and I've had them before. We've always talked about the Mesa Boogie Electrodyne, which was their kind of take on a Marshall Plexi. Which come up occasionally. They were kind of relatively unsuccessful, I think, at the time. But yeah, I reckon a Mesa Boogie Lone Star. What about you, Joe? What's been through your hands and amp wise, or what would you go out and get right now if you had to get something?
I actually think the amplifier that there were two amplifiers that are kind of, you know, they hold something special in your past, and you're like, "Yes, that's a thing that I want, that I don't have now, and that I really should get." And I think, yeah, there are definitely two that stick out for me. I'm sorry, dear listener, they're both going to be bass amps, because honestly, the simple fact is I just know so much more about what I want from bass than guitar. Guitar I can have whatever. it's hilariously enough a Hartke HA 5500, or however you say it, 5500. Do you remember these, Matt? Do you remember these at all?
I do not. I thought you were going to say something like a Gorilla practice amp for some reason. Hartke 55, yeah, HA 5500. Oh, I know the ones.
So yeah, so these are just quintessential bass amps. They're solid state with a valve preamp, so very similar, I guess, setup to the Ashdown ABMs that I play today. But the great thing about the Hartkeys is what you had was there was no drive control on them. I loved the uniqueness of the way these amps were laid out. So it had a graphic equalizer. I can't remember how many bands, maybe 10, I don't know, 12.
I think
like
it
that.
Looks
a
like
good amount.
10. I think it looks like 10. I'm looking at a picture now.
it was a good amount. But then crucially, the way that you would drive a 5500, rather than having like a gain and an output as you would on an ordinary amp, what you had was two controls, one for your preamp, one for the tube in your preamp, and one for the solid state part of that. So two completely independent rotaries, A and B, and you could balance those. You could turn one off and just have the solid state. You could turn solid state off, just have the valves doing the work. Or you could blend them. So you got different amounts of clean headroom versus that sort of the ruckusness of the 12AX7 in the preamp. And then there was this lovely contour control that would give you a gorgeous push to your mids. There was a low pass and a high pass on individual rotaries, and then just a master volume at the end. So it was quite involved for something that was relatively simple. It was just very unique, gorgeously unique, but also almost impossible to get a bad sound out of. It just sounded good no matter what you did with it. And I just loved that about the product. I always thought it was absolutely fantastic. And they did at around when the HA series was in its heyday, they did an HA series of bass cabs as well, which were right up my street, because whilst Hartke are probably most known for making aluminium cones in their I can't remember what they called that series. It was like Hyper or something. It doesn't matter. They're known for that sort of very modern, very brittle, very trebly sound. But with the HA stuff, they made cotton wool lined, narrow cabs available in 410s or a 15. I think those are the only two size cabs they did. So a bit like vintage bass cabs, and they sounded like vintage bass cabs.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, at a time when Ampeg were just like, what are you doing? What is this brand anymore? Hartke were offering such a wonderful solution for bass players that could be that traditional thing, but it could also do that modern thing really gorgeously. And they go for very little money these days. They're definitely worth.
And you've got a similar cab right now, right? You use the kind of cotton line...
I had Ash Down make me custom cotton wool line cabs because I was so inspired by the Hartke HA series. So when I started playing Ash Down cabs, I asked their custom shop if they could make me something basically like the HA stuff, which I'm pretty sure the HA stuff would have been about a quarter of the price. But they were real good. So I think that for me was my big amplifier that I wish I'd got. The other one, I was trying to look for the other one because I couldn't quite remember the name of it. So that doesn't really instill much confidence in how highly I regarded it, but certainly something that I wish I could get. It was a Mesa Boogie amp. Now, I thought they were called the Tour Man or something like that. It was a bass combo.
Because... what was the bass head and cab they did for a while? Weighed an absolute ton. The only reason I remember that is once we had a request when I worked, I think at GAC, for someone who wanted them, but they lived on the Isle of Wight. They had to be custom ordered, and they weighed so much that technically they had to arrive on a pallet. And I think the delivery was hundreds of pounds. For this one set of bass guitar. But I can't remember the combo. I definitely remember
Walkabout.
Okay.
Walkabout. I remember checking out because Ben Kelly, the second bass player for Incubus, he obviously was a guitarist first. And he started playing them. I think basically he was Mesa Boogie endorsed and then became a bass player and was like, well, what bass amps do you have for me to play at stadiums? And they were like, we've got a 300 watt combo. And so he was having to play like his stadium setup was like eight of these combos because he had to make them look like a big wall of amps, but they didn't do any big amps at the time. But yeah, it was a single 15 inch. By the looks of it, Walkabout Scout combo.
Wow, yeah. I don't remember those at all.
They basically look like everything looks today. All bass combos look today, which is going after that Ampeg B15 style sort of top mounted controls look.
Right. How much were they? They must have been.
Well, they go now for like 800. I'm looking at one for 825 quid on Reverb.
Oh, right. And then look at the controls on the top. Yeah. Very early 2000s.
Yeah.
Very boogie. Oh, yeah. I bet they were heavy as well.
Very boogie. I bet they are. I bet it weighs.
Although it says neodymium speaker. So I don't know. Doesn't have any weight on it, but I remember most of that boogie stuff was heavy regardless. Yeah. But yeah, well there you go. So you'd have a boogie, I'd have a boogie, and we'd be a right old boogie band.
Yeah, very very early early 2000s of us.
Well, interestingly, I started watching, as I'm sure most people have already watched or have watched or starting to watch. And if you haven't watched, I would recommend the Woodstock 99. I think they call it Trainwreck, Woodstock 99, the documentary.
I just saw the trailer. It looks harrowing to watch. I haven't put it on yet because I feel like it's going to make me nervous. Give me an advert for it.
So basically, I'd already knew a bit about this, but effectively Woodstock 99, 30 years after Woodstock 69, the famous festival of peace and love, 500,000 people descending to a free festival in New York, 250,000 people attended a paid for festival on a disused army base / airfield in the middle of New York in 40 degree heat to watch the biggest bands of 1999, including Limp Bizkit, Korn, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Metallica, amongst others, and chaos ensued. Won't ruin it. It's worth watching. Basically, a terribly organized festival with a lot of angry young teenagers from 1999 being charged extortionate amounts of money for food or drink, just like festivals today. And then Limp Bizkit came on in the middle of the second day and basically broke stuff, should we say. So definitely worth a watch. But it's interesting, I was watching it from a kind of guitar perspective, and obviously what I tell you what was super interesting, Joe, was Korn were the second to main headliners on Friday night. The main headliners were Bush. And I never thought Bush of being that big of a band, but apparently their first record sold 6 million copies and they've sold about 20 and went six times multi-platinum in the US. And they came on after Korn, and you watch the footage of Korn, you're just like, it was insane. But, you know, they've got big, I can't remember what amps they were using, but the one bit of rack gear that sticks out, Line 6 pod. Was one of the right Line 6 pods in both rack units. And I'm just like, wow. If they sounded good enough for Woodstock 1999, I'm sure they sound good enough today. Definitely worth a watch. Yeah, from a bit of a guitar perspective, some of the bands on there. There was actually a Woodstock 1994, which lost loads of money. And this one time around, they were like, we need to put on a festival that makes loads of money. But yeah, they sort of like ran out of water. I think the heat got up to the heat wave experience in the UK at the moment. So it's like 100 degrees Fahrenheit. People just got very angry, Joe. And definitely worth a watch from that. Can't even remember how we got onto that. But yeah, definitely worth a watch. And from a guitar perspective.
It was because we were talking about the mess of boogie.
Oh, and of course, period. Yeah. And of course, the time period. Yeah, that sort of.
It's so funny when I think about that time period, and sorry, dear listener, obviously this is quite a beaten track for us, but when I think about that time period and the stuff I was using then, and like what I thought about gear, I remember as a bass player, like the Line 6 Spider bass combo being an aspirational piece of equipment back then. I remember when I bought my first pod, and I was like, "This is fantastic! I've got all the professional grade amplifiers I will ever need in this kidney shaped red thing, you know." And like the guitarist in my band buying one of those Vox Valvetronic things. Yep. AD50,
AD100.
Yeah, yeah. And that's because he really wanted just a regular Vox, you know. but we talked him into it and
terrible friend.
I know it broke after 3 months or something like that, you know, just outside of his warranty, because I think he got it second hand. But I remember just how aspirational those sorts of pieces of equipment were at that time, and how genuinely terrible they all were.
Yeah.
Although I don't know, the pod probably, I've never listened to a pod again, so I don't know, but you know, people say it stood the test of time.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting you talk about gear to aspire to, because kind of segueing into another part of our agenda, Joe, but this is the Rabea signature neural DSP archetype plugin. And the reason I thought I'd go to this was because we're talking about aspirational gear. Do guitar players now, I'm going to sound like a granddad guitar player now, but do those youngins, do they still want amps? Have they got aspirations for amps, or is it more just about the sound? Because so many people out there are using plugins for writing, recording, yeah. You know, I think it's interesting, and I always come back to when we interviewed Pliny, and he was like, "I only ever plugged an Ibanez into an ME50 into headphones." I was talking to a young guy who does some videos for a YouTube channel earlier this year, and he's like, "I've never plugged into an amp. I've never owned an amp. Yeah. I've only ever owned a multi effects, or I've only ever plugged into my computer." And I think the great thing is now, if you look at, and we'll talk about some of the features in a second, but this Archetype Rabea, you know, the neural DSP plugin, it's $130. I mean, it's got so many sounds on it. It sounds so good. And I'm like, what? If you're at home a lot and you're a bedroom player, like, what more do you need?
Well, this is kind of it. And we'll hear sort of listeners, you know, give me feedback against this after the podcast. But I think the question is more like, what young players aren't using a plugin and a DAW? Because it's just such a standardized thing there. And dear listener, I know, like, you know, I'm nearly 40 as well. And I know I've sort of, you know, me and Matt have done all the podcasts on virtual stuff, but I appreciate that I was late to the game. And a lot of our listeners are, you know, have never ever dived into this side of things and are very much amplifier minded, which is absolutely fine. As you know, I've said on the podcast recently, I'm going through a big, you know, traditional valve, no plugins, nothing digital sort of point in time at the moment. I'm sure I'll 180 on that at some point, I'm sure. but I guess my point is, I think whilst there are loads of us out there who just haven't touched upon this sort of stuff at all, this is a real, real strong movement now, and I think most young players, this is far more interesting to them than shelling out £1,000 that they don't have on a, you know, the latest Mesa Boogie.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, the amazing thing about the Rabea one, and again, we spoke about plugins, it's not my favorite thing. Maybe if I played more or had a bit more of a studio room that I could play more and didn't have as much amps and pedals that I just wanted to plug in all the time. I think this is amazing because actually, you know, I love Rabea. I've known him for years, you know, and been all across, you know, Europe and even Japan with him. Spent a lot of time with him, and you know, he really does know his sounds. He's a great player. His pedal board, he's got some really specific sounds, especially for Tosca, which he did, which is obviously the Octaver and the Fuzz, which are both on board, but he's also got a compressor and an overdrive for more of his kind of classic. He gets some great sort of strat tones. But what I absolutely love in this is him going, can we do something different in terms of the effects? You know, every plugin has its own unique thing. And this one's got a synth that triggers genuine synthesis. It's not a synth model. You know, it's not strings triggering, you know, another plugin sound. It's triggering some sort of digital synthesis, you know, using the actual strings to kind of trigger an oscillator, an ADSR, that's your attack, decay, sustain and release, as well as a filter to get like real kind of great synth sounds. And I think that's just a great production tool again for guitarists to do something a little bit different.
You know. This is it. And this is exactly it. This, as part of the Archetype series that Neural DSP have done, essentially, these are all different voicings of the same sort of backbone, you know, which is the archetype. And they've had a bunch of artists do different things. And they're great. They're all fantastic. But they are just voicing specific to that artist. So you as a non-artist would just choose the flavor that you like the most. I really enjoy that Rabia's tried to make an all-in-one, which is something I think Corey Wong probably did more than any of the other plugins that they had. Corey Wong tried to offer something for everyone in his archetype plugin. And I feel like Rabia's taken a little bit of a leaf out of that book and really tried to make this a very, very versatile thing. And that's the great thing about Rabia is he's a great clean Strat player, as he demonstrates in the videos for this, and as this plugin will lend itself to, as well as being able to do the big ridiculous post Rocky things.
Yeah, exactly. I think I think it's another win for plugins. I think there will always be a place for amps and things like Katana's, you know, speaking from experience, you know, have always been, or have been for the last sort of 5 years, very popular. Again, because I think they offer quite a lot in one box. And I think for a lot of people, it's, yes, there's a generational thing. You see Slash on stage and you go, I want a big Marshall, or, you know, that those kind of things. But nowadays, people are like, oh, I'm playing at home quite a lot. Like, what other choices have I got? And I think, Joe, we said it a few weeks ago, like, if you're going to go out and gig, I think most people are still going to go out and play an amp. Like, Rabi is still going to go out with two Krakens and two 4x12s. But he's not going to Michael that up in, you know, for the general stuff that he does in the studio, maybe. But I think it's having the right tools for the right job, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. This is just, yeah. This is a perfect rig for anyone who's looking for something that is looking for extreme versatility in a plugin. You know, for me, I'm probably not going to get this one. The thing for me is I'm still absolutely stumped by the newer DSP Tone King. I can't believe how good that thing sounds. And it's become the backbone of everything. I feel like I was okay at doing sort of guitar tones for the little guitar reel demos that I do. I was okay until the Tone King came out, and now just everything I do sounds great.
Yeah, I think that's the great thing again for shooting demos. It's not like you've got to mic stuff up and you know, you can just feed it straight into your interface and away you go. I mean, how good is that? Do you know, it just makes it better for that sort of stuff. You know,
exactly.
But yeah, I think again, just a very, very cool, very, very cool bit of gear.
Yeah, indeed. Now, I was going to ask Matt if you'd filled the space on your pedal board since we had Dan on the podcast. I understand you haven't, but you're doing something that Dan suggested.
Yes. So to be honest, I've been too busy to actually unbox my pedal board recently. So I think a few weeks ago, I was going through lots of different drives, lots of very good suggestions. And again, even today, talking about the Halcyon and the Redbeard stuff, the Red Mist, the Anchored Rhubarb, it kind of go, oh, maybe I should just put another drive in there, just because it's nice to have lots of flavors of drive. I've got the delay pedals I like. You know, I've got the kind of auto wah filter pedal I like. You know, I'm only really using a VB2. I thought, oh, maybe I could put DC2 on there, but kind of similar, you know, for what I'm doing. So I'm still sort of debating stuff. I mean, my demo pedal board that I use for work has an SY200 on it, which I've been like, it's just so good. It's so good. SY200, bit of MIDI, so you can just change presets nice and easy. With an expression pedal, there's some just amazing sounds in there. Absolutely amazing sounds. I was like, oh, maybe that. But one thing I did do was use the expression ramper, which we talked about last week. And yeah, if you haven't listened to last week, do go back and have a listen. But the expression ramper from Old Blood Noise is effectively two fixed expression pedal points, if you will, in a mini sized pedal. And you can either set A and B up, and every time you press the switch, it'll just go between one or the other, it'll either glide or just jump between one or the other. Or you can set it up to kind of, like an LFO, go up and down in a waveform, either a kind of square wave, so straight up and straight down, or a sine wave, so smooth up and smooth down.
It's just so you, there are so many applications.
Indeed. So I was actually using it for, so I actually put it on my board using it for the, to control the frequency cutoff of the filter pedal I use, because then that gives me a kind of almost, I can still, because the filter pedal I use has got an envelope, so I can still use it for auto wire stuff, but I can also, if I turn that on, it will, it was almost like I'm turning the cutoff control in real time, and you kind of set a cool speed, and then you kind of can have this like slow filtering up and down, or you can have it kind of quick for this kind of like bubbly sort of filter sound. Really, really cool. I think, as we said last week, it is a utility pedal that I think everyone should have kicking around in a drawer, because I definitely think it's there's some great stuff that you can do with it. Some really great stuff. I mean, one thing that I've done before a different way, but if someone's thinking, oh, how could I use it? Another great one was Boss DM2, for example. It's got a rate input for the expression pedal. You can use a expression ramper for that, and you can set the two values, so the A value and the B value, to be really short, and then have it go between the two, turn the speed up really quickly, and then it's almost like a chorus. So you're going between two really short delay times really, really quickly. But this, you know, I think, again, just one of those cool tools that you can have and just experiment with.
Yeah. For sure, exactly. Yeah, god damn it, they've really nailed utility stuff.
They have.
We said it to Dan, but you know, last week, but they really have nailed utility bits.
They have indeed. And on the vintage pedal front, Joe, I know you were talking about old Boss pedals, but just to wrap this part of the conversation up, Coda Music at the moment, I've noticed, have three of the big ones that we've been talking about: RV2, DC2, sorry, the old Dimension Chorus, and a T-Wah, all for sale at the same time. Joe, your wallet.
That is an attractive proposition. Although I kind of, I accidentally filled the space that I had.
Accidentally.
I filled it with a pedal that's far, far too big. I put a picture of it on the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook. Dear listener, join it if you're not already there. Facebook. Why am I saying the URL? Just Guitar Nerds group on Facebook. What I added was the Ashdown, the John Myung Double Drive, which is a pedal that I've had kind of here because, of course, dear listener, as you know, I work for Ashdown. And so I have all of their pedals and bits and bobs here. A lot of the drives for Ashdown have never really been for me. I find them a bit too soupy on the low end, and I quite like, I like a shallow drive, so I like clarity on my low end. I think that's an important bit. And Dave Green, the guy who, designed most of the original Green amps, who is the amp designer for Ashdown, he disagrees with me fundamentally on that.
Of course he does.
All of his drive pedals have, but like just so much gain. So I almost, to be honest, I got to a point where I don't really even check them out that much. You know, I record the sort of videos, but I'm like aware this isn't really going to be my vibe because, you know, it's just not the sort of sound that I like. And that's totally fine. I love everything else they do. It's just, you know, that's not really for me. But I sat down with the John Myung. I was like, I'm going to make a little reel for the John Myung today. You know, I need to do some stuff for Ashdown. And I plugged it in. And I had a bit more of a mess around with it. And I think the problem that I have with drive pedals is because I'm automatically like, I want transparency. I don't take drives over 12 o'clock. I don't really like taking them over 9 o'clock. You know, I like them being in that 3 to 6, you know, sort of sort of area. That's where I'd normally leave them on any drive pedal. It's just not the right place for the John Myung. And I found when I actually started turning up the drives and using the pedal as I guess it's intended to, as a big drive pedal, it sounded absolutely fantastic. I loved it. And so the drive pedal is very simple, you know, despite being utterly huge. It's like the size of three pedals, you know, for
I love it. No, I mean, I don't, is he actually using this live, or is this a studio tool for him?
It's, so he's not committed it to anything. Basically, he approached us, he approached Dashdown because he wanted a huge drive and fuzz sound for a new thing that Dream Theater are working on. So it was very much around that.
Right.
So he even came in and was like tweaking a V2 of the pedal recently. So he wanted something that could do massive harmonics and things like that, just a huge fuzzy wall of sound drive. So it's kind of a new thing for him, because I don't think that's really what his bread and butter is.
Right.
But the pedal itself essentially has two drives on it, called the double drive. Drive one's three controls. You've got a tone, a volume, and a gain. Drive two is more of a fuzz, and you just have a volume and gain on that. And they stack against each other, so one to two. The interesting thing is, too, the fuzz side isn't actually very loud. Like, it's almost like you can... they have independent foot switches, but I almost wouldn't recommend using the fuzz size on its own. It's almost a little bit lacking on its own, because really what it's designed to do is complement the first drive.
Right.
So when you run them into each other, it's gorgeous. And drive one on its own is fantastic. Drive two on its own, the fuzz side is just, yeah, as I say, just maybe a little weaker, or less, just a little quieter, really. But you slam the front end with drive one, and it sounds absolutely incredible. And it just gives you two really, really great harmonically rich drive tones. So I've had the best time. Because the reason the podcast is a day late this week, dear listener, is because yesterday I was filming a video for Polymath, where we meant to play like a live version of one of our songs. Our drummer works in a Brighton nightclub called Patterns. You know Patterns, Matt?
I do.
So we had. We went down there and recorded there. Our drummer's the sound manager there, stage manager there, something like that. So we were able to have that for the day and film the whole video, which is fantastic. The only problem was, of course, this weekend just gone was Gay Pride in Brighton, which is the biggest party in Brighton.
Yeah.
For a solid weekend. And we obviously rolled in on the Monday. Bear in mind, Patterns is a nightclub, pretty much on the Kemp Town side of Brighton. And we went in there and they were like, yeah, it's totally fine. You can obviously still use it. It's just cleaners didn't show up.
No.
So it was, the place was... it was interesting. Yeah, we had to do quite a... In the end, we were like, we're going to have to get some mops, really, in here and clean this place up, get it to a standard where we can... Because it was carnage in there. But it was wonderful. I had a great time. I had a great 8 hours. 8 hours of having to put all the same energy into one performance over and over again.
Oof. Yeah. Well, that's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. But yeah. Well, look forward to seeing it, Joe.
Well, there you go. Yeah, be out soon. In fact, yeah, this Friday, the first. I've been told, instructed by our label, not to call it a single, because they're not singles anymore. They're what are they called now? Are they moments now? I'm not sure.
It's moments.
It's like, yeah, that's what they, because it's all about getting. It's not like a single in a traditional sense. It's a track that's eligible, that's pitched for playlists on streaming services. So it has to be released separately, but you don't call it a single. It's not a single. It's a moment or a focus track. That's what we were told.
Focus
to
track.
Refer to
right.
it as. So our first focus is a single. It's a single. There are three singles coming out. Our first single comes out on Friday.
Wow. I look forward to it.
There you go. Lots of bass. Lots of bass on this new one. Opens with bass. Big bass lines. I think it was all... it's all, actually, the whole tone on the track that's coming out on Friday is there's no bass amp involved. It's two boss pedals going straight into the front of the desk. It's...
Straight into the front of the desk. Wow.
Yeah, it's the ODB1 going into the BD1X. So the BD1X is kind of a preamp going into the desk. And that's the tone for the whole record, for the whole track.
Right. How long is the track?
Well, it's so of course standard polymath would dictate that our tracks are 13 minutes. No, all the tracks are under 5 minutes on this record, and I think this first one's only like 3.5. I think the singles cut down; they cut out some of the intro.
That's super long intro.
it's basically the bass line looping sort of 4 times, and I think the label were like, we're going to cut this out for the single. I was like, god damn it. The only time I've ever been the first instrument on a polymath record.
And as we know, the new Mars Volta record is also now available for pre-order as well, right, Mr. Branton?
We don't need to talk about it.
Not happy yet.
I'm not happy. It's not good.
Is the whole record out now, is it, or...? It's just that first track.
Yesterday the third track came out, and it's if you thought the second one was bad, Matt, wait until you hear this.
Oh, just go back to D-Louse, that's what I say.
I know. Oh well. Anyway, dear listener, that pretty much brings us up to time on this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. We're going to go over onto the Patreon episode of the podcast, where I've got some... Based on actually recording this video yesterday, it's raised another question when it comes to guitar amplifiers, and I need your help, dear listener, in working out a solution to my predicament, and maybe your help, Matt, as well. So we're gonna talk about that there now. But thank you very much for joining us. You can join us for the Patreon episode, dear listener, on patreon.com/guitarnerds. $1 a month will get you access, it will get you this episode ad-free and early. $5 gets you access to the Patreon special episodes and our back catalogue. $10 gets you the lot, plus I'll sing you my thanks at the end of every episode. Find us on all your favourite social media platforms and join the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook to get involved in our weekly episode discussion. Thanks for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds.
Bye.
I didn't say farewell. I forgot to say farewell. Farewell! Everywhere to all right.
Porky Appaloteano. Shabuki la buki la bakabuji. Silly bakaka kamuka da noko da baka da lipa da papa da shaba da bo.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.